Okay, so it is around 5 o'clock on Wednesday, May 1st. I'm sitting in the parking lot of a gas station waiting for my friend Barrett to come pick me up. And we are about to head to the UCLA student protests. Today is likely the last day of these protests. Last night, shit got really hairy. A bunch of around 100 Zionist counter-protesters showed up and attacked the encampment of the pro-Palestinian solidarity movement of students that have been gathering there for about a week. The clashes got really violent. There were reports of, you know, the counter-protesters throwing fireworks, umbrellas and sticks and even mace at the pro-Palestinian camp, trying to break down their barricades. So class was actually canceled today, and there are rumors that the police are going to come by to sweep the encampment, although who knows if that's actually going to happen.
So we pulled up to the campus around 6:30, and the first thing we heard was a lot of helicopters in the air. That was kind of like the persistent tone throughout the day.
The dispersal order has come, so if you guys go in, the LAPD is coming.
Okay.
So if, just so you're prepared.
All right.
Do you guys have this? It's the jail support number in case you decide to go in. Okay. If you don't, use caution. Yeah. But if you go in now, the dispersal order has been issued.
Okay. Okay.
So, just prepare to be arrested.
Thank you.
Okay. And if you want to write it on your, just in case.
Okay.
I mean, it's the same number, but,
okay.
But if you write it on your arm.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Happening.
And so we kind of just pushed forward, and there was a rally happening on the stairs with, like, I would say maybe 200 students.
Yeah, 200, maybe 300 max.
UC Divest central target is BlackRock, too. The third richest entity in the world after the US and China. Richer than entire countries. BlackRock funnels its money into the top 5 transnational weapons corporations. Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Raytheon, among others. And all of those weapons are going to kill and slaughter Palestinians, Filipinos, all oppressed peoples across the global south. And surveillance technology like these here to surveil and police our communities here. The demand for divestment is not some abstract idea. It is concretely affecting all of us here. And when we put together our collective power and build up the organized capacity of the masses, who are the makers of history, time and time again. We find that the power really lies with us. Our comrades have said before, the masses are the makers of history. It is not one single person. It is never two people. It is never a group of people. It is always the people coming together in their collective organized power to demand for change, take up and fight for change. And we want to... You are all internal to taking up the fight for better conditions and imagining and building a world where we're not fighting tooth and nail every day to go to work and to go to school.
It was pretty mild-mannered, I would say. I would say it was nothing really kind of like out of the ordinary of what you would see at a regular protest. I will say I think some of the points they were making were a little bit more, I don't know, you could say like materially sound than other protests I'd heard in the past, which I think was pretty, you know, it was pretty interesting in a lot of ways. But other than that, I wasn't really, I didn't know what to expect from then on. I kind of thought it's like, oh,
you
maybe.
You were even disappointed. You said it was a little deflating.
Yeah.
But it was also really sweet. Like the sun was coming down. There was this like really golden orange light bathing everyone. And everyone was kind of perched up on the hill looking at the sunset together. It was like a really beautiful moment, I think. And then in the middle of the rally, we suddenly saw some commotion.
Yeah.
And people started standing up and surrounding this guy, this single guy, kind of short and small and skinny, like definitely not able to start a fight. But he was like being surrounded by students and they kind of chased him away. So we followed him.
Nothing happened, but I went up there. No political discussion. They started calling me a Zionist.
Why do you think they're calling you a Zionist?
Maybe because they just see that I'm not waving their flag around. I don't really have an opinion on it. All the news is lying to us anyway.
So you didn't
Nobody,
say anything.
I didn't say anything. Maybe like a couple hours ago I did. But here's the thing. I don't really have an opinion on it.
A couple hours ago.
What?
What did you say a couple hours ago?
Yeah, a couple hours ago I was going up there. I just said, don't they prosecute homosexuals in Palestine? That was quiet though, right? That was just a few very select people I asked. And then I go up there now. Right, and we just did some good drone shots and everything. I go up there now. He's like, guys, chain, guys, do the chain. And like, it's funny, they actually grasped my arm in the chain thing. I got it on video right here.
Are you a journalist?
I'm on YouTube by myself. It's Riley underscore Nimi, so it's R-Y-L-E-Y underscore N-I-E-M-I.
Okay. Yeah, that's and you YouTube. Would say that you're like politically neutral?
I'm very concerned. But right now, I just went up there politically neutrally. I'm not like Matt Walsh or Ben Shapiro going up there.
We're
they don't recognize
neutral.
Me, right? So, I have a very small following. I am very political, but I didn't discuss politics when I went up there.
Yeah.
But no, I am not. I'm going to be honest with you. I am not.
You're not neutral.
I am not neutral, no. I'm more conservative than Trump, to put it simply.
Wow.
I hate to tell you that.
What do you think about the protest?
He's not very conservative.
I know, yeah, that's what I'm
talking about.
What? Yeah.
Wait, do you mind if I help you with that stuff?
Yeah. Dude, I don't know where I put this. What
did the guy say to you?
What?
What did the guy threaten you?
He said, I'll beat your ass.
Oh.
It's not, yeah, he didn't see.
What did you say?
He said, I would have bought the cops a lot more.
Did you go up to them?
I cannot find my SD card.
Did you go up to them and just...
I can't find my SD card. I took it out when those guys started saying, give me that camera back. Look on the floor. You see an SD card?
Guys, look. This is history that was captured on that SD card.
Do you go to school here?
I do not. No, I'm from Temecula. I live very far away.
You're from where?
Temecula.
Oh, okay.
It's a city in between here and San Diego.
Yeah, I know where that is.
It's a very, very nice city.
Okay.
Very nice city.
Shit.
So what are your thoughts about what they're doing?
I think it's dumb. They should go to Washington, D.C. if they're going to try to protest the United States funding of the Israeli state. I just find it really odd how they're protesting at UCLA. I mean, UCLA.
Is that a Trump keychain?
This is from Trump Tower, Chicago, yes.
Wow.
This is, well, no, it's not a keychain. It's a money clip. It's a money clip.
Can I take a picture of that?
Yeah. I just took cash out of here, so that's why it's empty, but I usually I'm more of like Vivek a little bit more, Vivek Ramaswamy a little bit more, but you know, they're very similar in policy, so I can't complain. Trump's funny though, you gotta
admit.
What
are your thoughts on Trump? Just in general, are you more like a libertarian that way, or are you more
I'm more of
a
like, just get out of, I'm not a neoconservative.
Okay.
I'm not Dan Crenshaw, but.
Alright.
I mean, I don't see why we're funding it. Like, there's so many things that, like, I support, and then people say, oh, separation of church and state. Like, a lot of Democrats say, oh, separation of church and state, you can't do that. But then a lot of the Democrats will go and fund Israel. It's like, why are we funding Israel? Oh, because it says in the Bible that, like, I'm a Christian, but it's like, if you have separation of church and state, why are we using American tax dollars to fund?
But the Israeli government is a secular government.
Yeah, but the whole reason why we're allies with Israel in the first place, I gotta find my SD card, dude. I dropped it.
Yeah.
Do you remember exactly where the Bible was?
That's pretty interesting.
Opinions on stuff like
I don't know.
That were, you could almost say, nuanced and complex in a weird way. But yeah, that was a really interesting scenario. But then these students came up to him and they were wearing kifas and stuff and they were like calling him a bitch. And then he like immediately ran to the police and started like, they're threatening me, blah, 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 kind of kind of doing this, like, pulling this, like, performative...
Super performative.
Very performative, like, victim-y kind of thing, which I found was really interesting, too. Just to start things off, and then it got crazier from there.
So after we talked to the guy, we wandered into one of the student buildings that had been taken over and converted into a medical and food supply station. And at first they weren't really willing to let us in, but, you know, we kind of stood in line with some other protesters, and eventually they kind of opened the door and we came into this kind of zone that was full of supplies, just like stacks and stacks and piles of donated water and medical supplies and like masks and whatever you would need potentially in a protest was there. And there were like hundreds of them. So it was just like an insane bounty of supplies. And we kind of, you know, used the bathroom, got some food, and then noticed in the outdoor area that there was a group of women students, female students in hijabs, sitting in the corner, kind of talking quietly amongst themselves. So, you know, obviously we thought it'd be really interesting to talk to them about their perspectives.
Muslim American.
We are, yes.
Are you Palestinian?
Yes.
From the West Bank?
Yes. So, my family lives there right now in Bethlehem, so even for them, they've heard the news. It's been really moving for them. But again, like we mentioned before, it's definitely a risk for us all to be out here. You know,
it's such a huge risk, and I feel like that's something I really want to ask you guys about, because like, you're risking not graduating. You're risking getting arrested, obviously. Like, why do you feel like it's worth the risk, and are you afraid?
I think if we're talking about perspective-wise, in Gaza, there are no universities. What they're dealing with there is immensely different than what we're doing here. And I think the world has genuinely not brought light to the depth of the situation and how humanity really just needs to take a step forward, and I feel like that's what we're doing at this point. I feel as if we're finally making the news broadcast, we're finally getting our voices heard as students. Even if media is skewed, at least we're on there. Like last night, they tried to put the blame on the peaceful protesters when the Zionists were the one attacking us. Like, it's very different than what we're doing here is very different than the life outside, and especially in Palestine. Like, what we're doing here is nothing compared to what they're going through there. So it's 1,000% worth it, in my opinion.
Are you scared, though? Are you scared to be here?
I wouldn't say scared. I feel like there's a certain amount of anxiety around our fellow peers being hurt, about the severity of the situation that the police are causing, that were caused by the Zionists last night. But I wouldn't necessarily say it's fear, because fear makes you run. And people here are ready to not only just stand their ground, but to help those that are going to get injured in the process. Yeah.
That's what makes our people different. Like, we're not scared of anything. The police, even after the police gave the dispersal warning, I'd say 90% of people are not moving. And if they take down the encampment, they'll be back tomorrow morning, bright and early, rebuilding the encampment. So I think that's what makes our cause so much more impactful. You know, even if people shut us down, we'll find a way to come back stronger.
Do you think that the protests have shifted the ways that Muslim and Arab voices on campus are heard?
Unfortunately, my perspective is just my perspective. I think a really kind of common notion throughout the community is that it's Jewish voices for peace that leave a larger impact than the Arab Muslims who speak out about the situation, because the Arab Muslims have been speaking about this for the past 70 years. It's generational, you taught this. It kind of made more of a impact on the media when they're saying, no, not in our name. And that's what really kind of made everyone heard. I think we're more respected amongst necessarily our crazy people that value life and don't want to fund a genocide and are more open to learning about it. But I wouldn't say the media views Arab Muslim voices at an elevated place.
While we were talking to the girls, we started hearing sirens, and that kind of cut the interview short, and everybody kind of bolted up and like ran outside, and that was just the end of the interview. And so we definitely could feel like a change in the air. There was suddenly this like feeling of urgency and anxiety that had like ratcheted up, and everyone was kind of like running around trying to figure out what was happening with the police, including us. And so we ran down this like hallway stairs down towards like a parking lot, and we saw this van with like crazy party LED lights, a huge sound system.
Right now, we have an opportunity to define history, to be remembered as a generation of resistance. The eyes of the whole world are upon you. Your protests have ignited a fire that has spread to Canada, to France, to Britain, and beyond. These are the largest student protests in American history since the Vietnam War. The most politically charged in France since 1968.
And on the side it said, and what really caught my attention, it said, up with BRICS, which is the BRICS system, which includes Brazil, Russia, China. He was hinting at multipolarity. And this is like totally my wheelhouse. This is like, I live in this world a little bit. So I'm like, I'm going to talk to this communist cowboy guy in a cowboy hat, just wearing a Hawaiian shirt, pulling out knives and stuff. So we walk up to his van and we're like, hey man, can we just talk to you for a second? And we talked to him, and as we kept talking, you know, he was very sort of expressive in his views. And there was just, he wouldn't turn the sirens down. It was just blaring the whole time. He's like, I hate these Ukro-Nazis, these Zion-Nazis. And he was really sort of passionate and animated. But, you know, as somebody who likes Michael Hudson, blah, 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 I was like, this is the perfect guy to talk to. Because here's like anti-intersectional element of the rally, and hear what he has to say about the students, what, you know, some of his political philosophy. And here's this like 50 something year old guy, he's pulling out knives and stuff and talking about feds infiltrating.
Pulled out bear mace at one point,
yeah,
to show us,
and he was like ready for civil war to start, kind of had like prepper vibes a little bit, you know, probably was a QAnon guy.
The inside of his van, once he invited us to come in, was totally crazy. Like, he'd obviously been living there for a while and had all his supplies kind of stacked.
He had surveillance camera monitors like out on the outside of his van, and yeah, very
So do you,
Traore and Burkina Faso?
Oh
yeah,
the
fucking whole Sahel.
The same police that beat up students on campus train with Israeli forces.
I fucking am anti-imperialist. Fucking I'm pro fucking I'm a communist.
Are you pro-Russia?
Fuck yeah. Okay. Fuck yeah.
What do you
fucking
think of
stack up those goddamn Nazis like fucking cordwood is my fucking attitude. Same with the fucking Zionazis or the Ukro-Nazis. I don't give a fuck. They're all Nazis.
The Israelis incur losses on the battlefield.
What got you interested in
in your geopolitical in media, views?
Did you come from like Marxist theory, or was it?
Zionism must be exposed, and we must.
Well, I mean, I'm just a typical schmuck who basically was out there protesting George W. Bush's wars in Iraq. I was putting, you know, all that kind of stuff over the years.
So, were you a libertarian at any point?
No, I was never libertarian. I find their sense of economics to be juvenile and infantile.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a communist. I have a much broader understanding through Marx and Lenin of how economics actually works.
Right. This is precisely yeah, I like Capital 3 a lot. That's I like the Grungerus a lot too. That's actually probably
the what?
The Grungerus.
Grungerus.
That's that Marx wrote that. Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to read more. I've got. It's purest and
most vibrant. Right now, what I'm reading is. Remember to always stay focused on the
crimes of the occupation. Always. I'm reading Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky.
I know that.
Just because I really feel as if the thing that I've noticed the most about coming down and interacting with the LA scene is how infiltrated by FBI it is. And the entire scene is being manipulated through Instagram. All those fucking fuckers, I mean, from Lily, fucking Sweet Georgia Brown, all these fucking people are infiltrators. I fucking call them up on the phone and go,
have you ever worked, are you employed or in any way associated with any of the agencies of the United States government? You're bringing drums to the protest.
Right.
And then I get a fucking long song and dance. And I'm like, oh yeah, the whole fucking scene is infiltrated. That's why up in L.A. and other places, they're actually doing shit. Until this campus movement happened.
Right.
Nothing was really, I mean, it was just a bunch of boutique. Oh, the queers and gays for fucking, fuck you. You fucking, that's not how you fucking organize. If you understand communist organizing principles, it's based on class.
Imagine
and fucking,
for a moment living in 16th century Europe.
Fuck off.
Continuous war.
Yeah, I will say some of the intersection.
Continuous war. 16th century was continuous war, too.
I will say some of the intersexual language is a bit alienating right that now, they're using. We have an
opportunity to define. Yeah, yeah, I know. And what, of course. Generation of resistance. What, of course.
The eyes of the whole world are upon you. Your protests.
What, of course, the Sean Hannitys and the fucking Morning Joes are saying, oh, all those woke students, blah, blah, blah. They're citing, even though they hate liberals, since the Vietnam War, they hate fucking wokeism, they're siding with the fucking university administrators.
We as a generation are saying to the world, that's a good point. A lot of the right wingers are very unprincipled that way.
There's no principle with them at all. They're for free speech, unless it's fucking not their free speech.
Exactly.
And they're all fucking half of those goddamn right wing organizations are Zionist controlled. You name it. You name the website, it's a Zionist at the top. Sorry, they control all the media. You know that.
Zionist?
Yes. They claim to be Jews, which is a accusation. They have no connection at all to Semitic peoples. All those fuckers, those goddamn invaders, those settlers.
Well, the Palestinians are actually.
Yeah, no, they're the actual. Yeah, the Jews who've been there for 4,000 years. Yeah, those are the actual fucking Jews. All those fucking European colonizers. I have a fucking. It's a secret society. Excuse the fuck out of me. It's true because they fucking take over and run your own government just like they're doing ours. Every war we have fought in the last fucking 45 years has been for the Zionist entity. I wonder how American servicemen feel about that. You would think that they would be upset that they're just the fucking meat bags and fucking blood sacks for a bunch of Zionist fucks in Israel. But, you know, they actually support. Oh, yeah, there goes another F-16 and another bomb.
All of them.
Just fucking, yeah, well, that's, yeah, I know. There's a bunch of fucking veterans for peace.
Yeah.
But,
are you a veteran?
No.
Okay. Understand that we are engaging in resistance against imperialism, against Zionism. So what is your plan to how are you planning on engaging with the students? Are you trying to engage with them, or are you just trying to
right now?
Yeah, you're doing it with the speaker.
Shit, all everybody up there. I don't know if that's a hub or a lunchroom or what's up there on the balcony. There's a bunch of students up there. They're not involved in the protest. I'm letting them know.
Right.
People are counting on you. Their lives
depend upon it.
Right.
Their lives depend on it. Get involved. This is going to be the hottest summer. This is going to be the summer of discontent.
Eventually, when we finished talking to him and came outside, he was like, I got to put the star up.
And he put a Raelian star from that alien cult. But to symbolize, it's a Jewish star with a swastika inside. And so he put that up, and it was like mechanically lifted on the top of his van. So he had like some sort of pulley system that he could put that up. spray painted, like, it was really wild. I was like, well, this guy is like, this is the kind of crank I live to talk to.
I had to kind of cut it short because I knew that the police were encircling the encampment and I really wanted to see what was going on outside. So, you know, we said our goodbye and we went back towards the encampment. And at the time there were students like kind of protecting the entrance at the barricade, saying, you know, if you enter here, you have to know that you might risk arrest. Are you okay with that? And everyone was like, yes, yes, yes. And everyone who said yes would like go in. And we'd actually tried to go into the barricades before, but they'd seen me carrying my voice recorder and said, if you're media, you have to leave. So they'd actually bounced us already.
Let's keep it moving, please!
Sorry.
How are you doing?
Possibly.
I'm using my
brain. Media?
Yeah.
You need to be out.
No media?
No media. Please go out.
But this time, I think because the energy was getting so crazy and chaotic and there were just, you know, people going in every direction and it was dark, like they weren't really as, I think, militant or vigilant about policing media anymore. So we kind of just slipped in and we walked up this flight of stairs, turned the corner, and were just completely shocked by what we saw.
Let's just talk.
Okay. Well, so, to me, it looks like literally like Kurt Russell in Escape from New York. With like the scene with Isaac Hayes when they comes out, like the cyberpunk stuff. It's like, it's extremely apocalyptic.
Yeah,
there's helicopters. You feel like you just entered. You feel like you're like in the distillation of the Panopticon.
Right. There's like barricades with cardboard everywhere that have been spray painted with graffiti. There are people in hard hats that are kind of gearing up and wearing gas masks, getting ready for the police to storm in. There's also like tons of tents still up, medical supplies, and yeah, just a lot of people
snipers
getting ready.
Snipers spotted at UCLA from above.
Holy shit.
There's snipers on the roof right now.
And the energy is like super electrifying. People are obviously on high alert right now, super anticipating this. I mean, everybody knows it's going to be pretty brutal,
right?
Based on what's happened in other colleges. But they are letting media in now.
That's right over there.
Which is how we were able to get into the barricades. And there's someone waving a Palestinian flag. There are a lot of people waving Palestinian flags and drumming and
a lot of tents with the names of people who have died in the war. There's graffiti just everywhere. I mean, like, it's I don't think I've ever been to a pro, like, this is like pretty, this as far as like student protest goes, this one goes pretty hard.
People were definitely gearing up for some kind of confrontation with the police. So everybody was like pulling on, you know, hard hats and gas masks and self-defense kind of, you know, gear. And it was starting to feel really, I mean, to me, it felt really anxious. It felt like people were getting excited and high adrenaline. And just this palpable tension in the air, knowing that the police were surrounding us from probably all sides. And apparently there was like snipers on the roof.
Yeah. I actually saw, one guy's sniper outpost for a split second. And it was just as my friend was like, there are snipers. And he sent me an aerial picture of them. And then I was like, oh my God, yeah, there actually are. So I don't know how they got up on the roofs, but yeah, so that added a layer to it too, knowing that there was a guy with a sniper scope, you know, just like multiple, you know, I don't know if they're Black Rock or, I mean, Blackwater or some sort of like PMC military outfit that's private, who they are. But for some reason, yeah, that was very, very real. And you can hear the sirens coming up and you could see sort of things were getting very, very tense. But we ended up speaking with a guy and within the encampment, and you can explain.
Yeah, basically he was just standing next to me. We got right up to the barricades where allegedly the cops were on the other side. And I just kind of turned around to him and he told me that he actually founded the SJP chapter at UCLA a couple years ago. So I thought it would be really interesting to speak to him. And, you know, what I thought was kind of remarkable about our conversation was how calm he was. Like, I had way less at stake than he did. And I was already, you know, getting really kind of sucked into the nervous anticipation in the air. But he was totally calm. He seemed totally chill. And, you know, he seemed like very confident in his belief that the students and their supporters would hold their ground. I even asked him, what is your plan? What's going to happen here? Because, you know, the police are probably going to storm in riot gear in like a couple minutes. And he said, yeah, we're going to try to fight them off. we're going to try and keep this space and not let them evict us from this zone.
And so the police are literally encircling us right now. They're standing outside of this barricade. They're standing up on the balcony. And people aren't leaving. What is the plan?
The plan is to hold our ground, to let this encampment continue on until the students' needs are met. The students have made demands and requests of the administration here and UC as a whole. And until there's some movement there that these students are satisfied with, the idea is to continue to speak up. And this is part of it.
It's incredibly scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. For some, I think the feeling that I get from a lot of the people here isn't so much fear, maybe a little bit of anticipation, but when people have conviction, fear really gets put on the back burner.
Right.
Speaking with multiple people, none of them really seemed that scared. They were sort of expressing like this, I don't know. Well, how would you say they seem very calm, you know?
Yeah.
There was like a weird, even though it's like people were very tense, there was like a kind of like calmness to the situation too. It wasn't just like completely chaotic and people weren't screaming and crying. It wasn't like frantic, but you had all of the sort of commotion going around it. And it did look like bomb the fuck out. Like it for sure did, you know.
It looks super apocalyptic. Yeah, I think that was kind of the thing about the protest that surprised me is the sort of calmness of their convictions in the face of like total chaos and like a militarized police force and, you know, just unknown threats coming from all sides. It was really formidable.
I will say, though, that maybe, you know, circumstantially they can make bail. That I don't want to sort of say that, like, these students are, you know, some, like, you know, massive, brave heroes faced with the realities of, like, geopolitical, military, you know, bombardment that happens all throughout the world. But there is something that you, when you talk to some of the students, you can see that, like, they understand that to a degree. I don't think it's all just, like, you know, it's not just all about like, oh, we're some heroes or like we're actually, some of the speeches veered on that and I was kind of cringing, you know, in this really kind of self-grandizing, like student activist pretentious way. So some of the speeches I would say are like a little bit cringe, but that's kind of like, you know, these are people who are like professional aspiring activists within a like field. Most of the people there, I don't think were like that. And I didn't see any anti-Semitism at all, which I thought was like, you know, when you see mainstream media reports, you hear nothing but like anti-Semitism on college campuses. Many Jewish people spoke. They identified as Jewish. It wasn't like they hid it from anybody. I didn't catch any of that at all. So again, this is just my perspective of what I saw and heard, and I'm just trying to relay this as, I don't know, you can say objectively as possible.
So it's Friday, May the 3rd, the day after the encampment was shut down. And we kind of just wanted to catch up a little to kind of, you know, analyze what's been going on since then. I want to kind of start with the anti-Semitic charges that we kind of were discussing as we were leaving the protest, because I think it's really interesting to kind of look at the ways that the media and social media has refracted all of the things that we saw on the ground. So like the cowboy communist who we talked to, who was obviously like the kookiest guy that we met, like it was crazy the way that he was kind of interpreted by all these different factions online. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
So like, some people thought that he was a Zionist himself. Like the UCLA radio blog reported that it was a van of Zionist counter protesters. And I think, you know, people were kind of freaked out thinking that he was a Zionist, which is really funny and ironic because he was so militantly anti-Zionist. And then like the right wingers were going crazy on Twitter as well, saying that he was some like ISIS level, you know, propaganda truck.
People didn't realize that that symbol on the top of his van, and this is kind of why we speculate he was like an ex-burner or involved in some kind of like esoteric systems of belief, because it was a Raelism symbol, which was a UFO movement that was founded in the 1970s in France. And it's been classified as a new religious movement. So again, like nobody caught on to that. And just speaking to him, his trajectory, you know, he mentioned a little bit about the van being used as like a burner van for like Burning Man festivals.
Yeah, he was so burner in some ways. But also re-listening to our interview with him, like, I realized that some of the shit that he said was actually very dark and actually quite anti-Semitic, in that it, you know, it echoes a lot of anti-Semitic tropes, right? This idea, I don't know if we are going to include it in the final cut, but he talked a lot about how white people aren't real Jews. And like, I was talking to a friend of mine who's like a Jewish historian, and she pointed out really astutely that that really, you know, echoes a lot of the anti-white Jew rhetoric propagated by extremists like the Black Hebrew Israelites, who basically believe that white Jews are imposters and like hate white people in general. And, you know, he also had another like theory that he kept talking about how Zionists control the media. And obviously that's like a much more commonplace, I think, conspiracy that we hear all the time. And partly it's, you know, it is based on a degree of truth, and I think that's why it makes it really tricky to kind of parse. But we also know that this whole idea of like the global plot of Jewish global domination is like a really, you know, historic anti-Semitic trope.
There's no speech of the amount of Catholics that control these major global institutions as well. I mean, and how many CEOs, I think there's a highly disproportionate amount who are Irish. You know what I mean? You can't say all of it, because there are groups of people who obviously control various things. So it's like a bit of it gets conflated, because when you start to say like, well, all the capitalists are Jews, then A, that's not true.
Yeah, I think that this guy is just really interesting, because to me, he really pinpoints how the reality on the ground is so much messier and weirder than what you read about in the news, which is always this sort of black and white binary couched in a lot of like scare tactics of like, oh my God, look at this like extremist anti-Semitic guy who's pulled up in his truck and is waving around like the Nazi symbol.
But like the reality is that he's just like one dude from rural California who pulled up with like a fucking cowboy hat and a Hawaiian print shirt and like a burner, like his mashup of like subcultures and ideologies were just like totally confusing and crazy. And he also hates Nazis. And I think what's really important is that he was literally at the sidelines. Like his truck was parked so far away from the encampment that like nobody in the encampment probably even knew that he was there. And like, he just kind of came alone. And like, I guess the media would call him an outside agitator, right? Because that's the kind of like thing that the media would like seize on. And in some ways you could say that he was, but like nobody paid attention to him, you know? So like, I think there's this really interesting narrative that's coming out of like the news right now, where people in the media and in the outside are really trying to like portray the student movement as being infiltrated by like all of these like career activists and like outside infiltrators who are anti-Semitic and all these like dark powerful forces. And there's a lot of like discourse on like who can be considered a real protester or like a legitimate protester. And I think it's like totally overblown. I think it's totally missing the point of like what's really going on there. And once you actually show up to the protest, which we did, like you realize that the vast majority of it are students. A lot of Jewish students are in the encampment. We even talked to like the founder of the SJP chapter at UCLA at the barricades. Like there was no anti-Semitism within the encampment themselves. And like, yeah, like all these kooky characters are going to show up on the sidelines, but they're not the ones controlling the movement. And I think the news just loves to like delegitimize what's going on with these students and like paint them as violent. Another crazy thing that people have been talking about since is like the LA Times changing their headline. Did you see this?
Yeah, I did.
Like at first they were like, the Zionist counter protesters came through and violently attacked the students. And then they changed it to just say violent protests, you know, to make it really ambiguous about which side was being violent.
Yeah, but I mean, anyone can see through on the ground reports who was starting it and who was provoking it. You don't spring up on a group of people with blaring, crying baby sounds and, you know, everybody sort of knows, can assume the pretense of like what, how that's going to go down. You know, I think that's pretty obvious.
I think so too. I mean, it should be obvious, but I think unfortunately, a lot of people don't read the firsthand reporting and are just listening to the ideologues and the pundits. And even Biden himself, like when he made a statement on the student protests, he said something like, dissent is important for democracy, but dissent should never lead to disorder. And that statement, again, I think like doesn't really make it clear who are the instigators of the disorder to begin with, you know? And I think these students did everything perfectly. Like they staged like the perfect peaceful protest. They had perfect messaging. They had press liaisons, they stayed super grounded and disciplined throughout like all of the chaos and all of this like really scary violence from Zionist extremists. And they still are being portrayed by the media as like chaotic and dangerous.
There is a bit of truth to that because of the sort of private public property vandalism that was taking place in the encampment. I mean, the way our system works now is the police are essentially there to enforce property rights. You know, that's one of the reasons why they exist. So if you are a property holder within a privatized economy, there's going to be violence isn't necessarily seen as something that can happen from person to person, but also person to property and person to object. But again, it's like the students are paying the tuition. They weren't violent themselves, though, like to anybody else, like to any people. even when they bounced people, it was like pretty milquetoast, you know? Like
it was more like getting bounced from a club.
Yeah, it was like, I've seen club bouncers go way harder on people.
Right. So, yeah, speaking of violence, let's talk about the police violence that kind of happened in the shutdown. So we left the protest around 9:30, and we heard the police coming in a little bit before that. There were officers from the LAPD, from the California Highway Patrol, and from the LA County Sheriff Department. Three different forces pulled up, and they kind of just stood around the perimeter for a really long time, like ordering pizza for dinner and just like chilling for hours. And then I think around 2 a.m., as I was falling asleep and like, you know, deliriously scrolling and trying to follow what was happening through the feeds, I saw a lot of the protesters cheering because they'd actually successfully pushed the police back from the encampment, which was crazy because so many people had showed up to hold the line. I think that the police weren't able to break through. But then about 40 minutes later, at around 3 a.m., more police came through. I think like a couple hundred more officers showed up in riot gear, and then they proceeded to like really go in on the students. Like they were shooting them with rubber bullets, they were blasting chemical agents, they were using stun grenades, they were beating people with sticks. I mean, there's like, you know, lots of images of like students. There's one in particular of a student who got hit in the face with a rubber bullet. And yeah, I mean, his Twitter account, I'm laughing because his Twitter account was so funny. It was like cum dumpster or something. And, but the violence isn't funny. I mean, the police violence was really out of control, I think. And that's being condemned somewhat, but I think it's kind of being lost in all of the many different strains of discourse of and accusations that are kind of flying on all sides. But anyway, the encampment is gone now. I think yesterday the police were just basically throwing out everyone's belongings. And my friend who was reporting on it and went there yesterday said that the police only allowed the counter protesting Zionists to take away their jumbo screen that they were using. But they didn't let any of the students get their shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they trashed everyone's shit. And you could see the conservative pundits were like, look at how messy the encampment was. These people live like pigs. It's like the cops destroyed everything. When I was in there, I was shocked at how orderly, at least the tents, you know, like I said, there was plenty of property damage done on the outskirts of the encampment, but the way that they were actually functioning was very on point. I was actually kind of like, whoa, you people are way more organized than any of the other sort of protests that I've been to, where it's just like, yeah, people like literally swimming in garbage and shit and like not caring and being like, we're gonna start a revolution. It's like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, the right wingers just hate messy tents. We know that. So, Barrett, where do you think this goes next? Like, what's the next move in this sort of developing movement?
You know, it's really hard to say. I think when they're hinting, when people are talking about hard economic material sort of concerns and realities, I think that's a very positive step. So even though I've never really kind of seen this as like, you know, an end, that people are literally going to overthrow things, that things are actually going to happen that way. But when people talk about stuff like withholding funds from certain institutions, when people talk about stuff like that, when people are talking about, you know, central banking, savings and loan companies, and being skeptical of that side and even things that are very taboo amongst, you know, these groups of people, even when it comes down to stuff like Pfizer or the World Economic Forum or Davos or stuff that's usually associated with right-wing conspiracy theorists, people like Alex Jones, the fact that they're sort of all kind of adopting this pan-skepticism over every single financial organ that structures our lives, how people can actually do something, I think that is leading to a very good thing. The millennial protests that I went to, it was all sort of like this nebulous ideological sort of like, it was like a kind of like sociology of moving goalposts of like, we want this and this and that, but they're not talking about stuff like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the conversation is complexifying, and I think these students are definitely going to be back in some form or another. And I think that the communist cowboy was right in one aspect when he said it's going to be the summer of discontent. I think we're going to go into a season of really heavy protesting and, you know, social turmoil in a way, because these kids, and I'm going to say kids because I think people forget like how young college students are sometimes. That's not to discredit them. It's actually the opposite. It's to give them a lot of credit for what they're doing. But I think, yeah, these kids, they graduated into the pandemic for high school, and now they're probably not going to be able to graduate college because of all these protests. And so they don't have as strong of a like desire for comfort and normalcy that I think holds back a lot of other people from protesting. So I definitely think that this is like the new normal in some ways. And I'm looking forward to seeing how the discourse around divestment continues to evolve. I think that there's a lot of other threads that need to be talked about and considered. A really good point that my partner Tyler brought up yesterday is that you know, this is also a question about security and like terrorism and how Israel is responsible for Pegasus, which has been largely keeping America safe from terrorist attacks since 9/11. So, you know, divestment for the sake of justice might also entail some real sacrifices in national security. And that's, I think, something that not many people want to really think about, right? But it's real.
Yeah. I mean, that's very, very true also. And these are not answers that are going to satisfy, I think, a lot of people who are just, you know, taking one side or another through social media. I think most of the people reporting at the encampment were, you know, mid-level, you know, news outlets or online news outlets. And there was one larger one, which is Al Jazeera. And so I wasn't actually seeing a lot there, you know, of people who are actually going in and interviewing people. So I think this could be potentially like very illuminating. But Pegasus is also used for sexual blackmail stuff. You know what I mean? Like it hits both ways.
Oh,
it keeps
yeah.
people safe,
oh,
but
yeah.
it also incurs, you know, it, I mean, it is the panopticon. So
yeah.
like it can't be,
evil.
You can't frame Pegasus as this like overtly positive thing that keeps us safe.
Oh, not
in a
at
lot
all.
Of ways. It,
not at all.
It destroys our civil liberties also. So it's kind of, you know, it's a complex situation.
I think that, yeah, I think that what I'm trying to say though is just basically that divesting from Israel entails a lot of structural revisions and changes that need to happen for that to happen. And it's not just about like corporate executives getting paid less money or something.
Yeah,
it's really about overhauling all these different things that are running our country right now.